Tonight on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, we have Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and reuniting kids with their families. We have Kane County Child Advocacy Center investigator Chris Tunney. And from the upcoming dance celebration in Millennium Park, we have Mary May with popular Chicago chef Jason Balin on his new spice store in Wrigleyville. And finally, from FH Passion, Chuck Freeheit. But now, live from the Allstate Skyline Studio here in Chicago, here's your host, Andrea Darlis.
It's 710, 720 WGN. Yes, I'm Andrea Darlis. Patty Vasquez is away. She's far, far away for a couple of weeks, right? She's gone for 2 weeks now. So we're going to be sitting in. We're just going to be chit-chatting with you guys, right? For the next couple of weeks. It'll work out well. We've had good shows, haven't we, Mike?
I've had a blast so far. Last night was Sean Lewis from WGN TV. That was great. Eric has been a lot of fun talking to him as well about all the insights and what you guys have going on the TV side of things.
All the backstories, all the stories that we get on the street. Domati Pongo is in tonight doing the news. Domati, we are going to push you to work and do some salsa lessons.
Let's
later
do
on.
It. And I'm playing the role of Andrea Darlis, which this is fun.
I know. You look much different than I do.
Much different. No, not so much.
Less lipstick, less blush.
We both have great hair.
We do. We do. I actually did my hair tonight. I have friends in the studio, so I thought I'll actually do my hair instead of pulling it back. And then Judy Pylik said to me, it's radio. It doesn't matter anyway. Except we are on the stream. If you want to watch us, WGNradio.com. You can check us out. We have some friends of mine in studio tonight. A great guest. We always have great guests, but Kristen Zeman, the Aurora Police Chief, thank you for being here, and Chris Tunney with the with Kane County Child Advocacy Center. So we had a lot to talk about, you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
You enjoying your night in the city?
Yeah.
Coming
I
in
was,
from...
I'm a little worried that Mike was judging, because when we were in the green room, I was literally being a peeping Tom in the hotel next door.
Oh,
there's
my
a
God.
Lot going on over there. I'm ashamed to admit that, but...
Can I just tell you, you can't not look. It's
nope.
almost like it's I hate to say the expression, like a train wreck, but you can't not look. We have had stories. Usually every night, something weird happens. So we face. Okay, so this is facing east and we have a hotel here. And then when we're at the other studio, we face west and those are condos and hotels. But you can't help but look. The only thing I would say to people, no matter where you stay, what city, what town, close your drapes.
And they have no idea that anyone is watching. And I was just admiring the view. So, I mean, to be clear, I wasn't looking to see anything. And then it just caught my eye that there's a lot going on. And there's a bunch of different things happening. So
it just happens.
Yeah.
You can't stop looking.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks for being here. A lot's going on in Aurora.
Yeah, we have a lot going on.
You just had the National Night Out.
We did, yes.
Tell everybody what that is.
So National Night Out is a night where, as you know, and this day and age of social media, a lot of people sit behind their computer screens, and that's great because Facebook is a great venue to communicate. We have a lot of other venues like Nextdoor, and we have really good conversations on that, but nothing surpasses the face-to-face interaction that neighbors have with one another. So National Night Out is the thing that we do once a year, and this was a record number of neighborhoods that came together, 41 of them in the city of Aurora that came together and got all their neighbors together and got to know each other. And, you know, it's that human interaction that's so important, and that's what relationship building is. So we had all of our police officers try to stop as many. We divided and conquered. And like I said, 41, there were so many, but we had a lot of police officers out there. But it's just, it's a build relationships in times of peace.
Right. Absolutely. And especially now. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we have to talk about everything going on in the area. I mean, of course, you know, the violence in Chicago is mm-hmm. just escalating and getting, you know, bigger and badder every single day, it seems. Mm-hmm. Do you see a lot of the after effects coming out way out west in the suburbs?
You know, we're about 40 miles due west of here, and we don't see the same trends. We do see see some of the same people. And, you know, you'll hear on the news that, you know, this is a person who is very well known to the Chicago Police Department. We'll have a lot of those people who are known affiliates that we come in contact with, but we aren't seeing the same kind of crime trends that you are here.
Right, right. No, you hear, I'm sure, the stories of the heroin highway and, yeah. you know, trickle down crime and whatnot. So it is an issue. It is a problem. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, not at the level that we're facing.
Yeah,
it.
Absolutely. And we've taken, I mean, there's been in Aurora, and we have a reputation. I mean, we're the second largest city in Illinois, second to you guys. And we have a reputation for having issues. And that's how it was in the 90s. It was actually, and that's when I came on as a cop in 94. And it was night after night of shootings. And we were upwards of over 30 homicides. And that's a lot for us. And, you know, we've taken great reductions. We had zero in 2012. Unfortunately, there's nowhere to go but up from mm-hmm. zero. So
7:22 in the morning. Boy, old habits are hard to break, right? 7:22 in the evening. Patty Vasquez Show with me, Andrea Darlis. Patty out of town for a couple of days, so we are holding the fort down for her. Talking with Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and Chris Tunney from the Kane County Child Advocacy Center. And we were talking before the break. I wanted to ask you both about social media and how is that. I see all the time, you know, we in the newsroom, of course, here at radio and at TV, get announcements from the police department and, you know, be on the lookout for certain suspects. How has social media changed your department, again, for the better or for the worse?
I'll start in a broad sense, and then Investigator Tunney can take it over okay. in a very specific sense. But the fact of the matter is social media is both a blessing and a curse. It's great because it allows a venue for communication that is not normally there. We are having conversations with people that we wouldn't normally have conversations with, and that's always a good thing, is to be able to communicate. It's a great way to share information. But as you know, the dark side of social media is that, you know, people can not only predators, crimes committed, hacking, all of those things, identity theft and things like that. That's bullying. I mean, all of the there is such a spectrum of horrible things that happen on the internet. And so you also have people that under anonymity, you mm-hmm. know, can bully people and say whatever they want. We have a lot of misinformation that flies around. And, you know, if you read it on the internet, it must be true. So we combat a lot of rumors, which takes a lot of time. But as I said, the positive side is to have those conversations with people. I'm big on social media. There's a lot of police officers that aren't, but I've been big on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and all of those things, because for me, that venue is great to be able to converse with people, where otherwise they would have to call my office. And that mm-hmm. just seems, you know, so it's not as intimate. So I like to be accessible to people, but again, all of those things, and Chris can better speak to some of the crimes that she sees with social media.
Right. I mean, for me, I mean, I would look at it strictly from a community watch standpoint. You know, this is who you're looking for. This is what I want to find. And I mean, the videos of the porch pirates too, you know, mm-hmm. so every holiday season that comes around, yeah. it's a great venue for people to actually go online and quickly see what's happening in their department. But cyberbullying, I mean, obviously that's a problem, and it's getting worse too. Do you think?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Oh, wait, sorry. Okay, now go ahead. Lean up. Let me turn you on here.
Unfortunately, okay. I see the bad side of social media more than I see the good side in the job that I do. So for me, social media is fantastic because it lends a lot of evidence for me when I'm investigating a crime. But right. unfortunately, because we're not monitoring our children, we're not paying close enough attention to what they're doing, we're allowing predators into our home through their social media, whether it's the Kick app or Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, it doesn't matter what it is, we're not paying attention, and people are allowing that, it's allowing access to our kids, and we don't even know that they're doing it.
I didn't know there was Teen Tinder until a friend of mine's daughter was on Teen Tinder and was starting to get solicited by, you know, men who were not teenagers.
Right. And there's no, the hard part is even with some of the apps that are 18 and over, where kids are getting on them anyways, and they're checking that age, which makes it harder for us, because to, like, for Tinder, for example, you have to be 18 to sign up. So kids are marking that box that, yeah, they are 18, and then they're going out, predators are meeting them, they're violating these kids.
Right.
And then we can't do anything about it because the kids said they were 18 years old.
What's the Kane County Child Advocacy Center?
The Advocacy Center started the whole thought of the Advocacy Center started in 1985. And what they realized back then was that the way that we were looking at child crimes was wrong. Mm-hmm. We were re-victimizing children. Children were forced to talk to multiple different people and explain the same thing over and over again. And at the end of the day, we were doing more damage than good. Mm-hmm. So a congressman came up with the idea to bring all the social services agencies together. So we work with DCFS, police, state's attorney's office, mental health professionals, medical professionals. We all come together and we're kind of like a one-stop shop. So we have a place that isn't a police department. It looks like a house. Kids come there and they're able to tell their story one time.
So it's a safe haven.
It's a safe haven. We bring them in and they only have to talk, hopefully, if everything goes right, they only have to tell the story of their abuse one time. And all the agencies are together. And from there, we call it a multidisciplinary team. We work together through the investigation to try to figure out what happened and, if it's possible, prosecute the offender.
Okay, how hard is that to get a child to talk, though?
You know, I'm a firm believer that a child isn't going to talk until they're ready to talk. I can try to make them as comfortable as possible, but the fact is, you know, I interviewed a 9-year-old today, and I had about 15 to 17 minutes with her before her attention span was over.
Right.
So
right.
I needed to get in, try to get her comfortable enough to be there with me, and hopefully she would tell her story. Thankfully, she did. Mm-hmm. But I think that a kid is ready to talk when they're ready to talk. You can't make them talk until they're ready.
Is it hard to build trust?
It's very hard to build trust because obviously their trust has been broken already right. by somebody they probably trusted and loved.
I mean, it's one of the toughest jobs, Chris. I mean, how do you tell a kid, hey, this is not normal. This is not the norm. Because if you're interviewing a 9-year-old, that's perhaps what they've known their whole life.
We're pretty lucky now that the education is out there. We have things like Aaron's Law that come out and they talk in the schools and they start to let kids know. A lot of times kids don't understand until they go to school and maybe see this presentation that what's happening isn't okay. And a lot of times we spend a lot of years talking to kids about good touch, bad touch, and that's the wrong way to teach your child. Because the fact is at the end of the day, sometimes bad touches feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, it's teaching our kids their right body part names,
right.
knowing what's not okay, and giving them the freedom and the opportunity to feel comfortable enough to tell you what's happening.
Right. It's a tough job, but, you have to do it. We want to protect our kids. You guys hang out for a little bit? Okay, we'll be back with the news after this on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Michael, you're playing all my favorite music. Patty Vasquez Show with me, Andrea Darlis. Patty's out of town for a couple of days. We are continuing our conversation with Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and Kane County Child Advocacy Center Investigator Chris Tunney, talking about how best to protect our kids these days. And it's so timely, you guys, because we got an email today saying there's the latest spam that's going around. It's targeting all of our personal Facebook messages. Don't open it up. It could be images of child pornography, which is awful and horrendous, and I can't believe it's 2018. And how do these spams still get through? I mean, there's firewalls. How do we prevent that? Or there's just no way to do it?
No. I think that you just have to have the knowledge that not to click on anything that you're
right.
that's suspicious. We are just on our way here, and my 19-year-old daughter is with us, who's also looking up Teen Tinder right now.
Right, I know.
She hadn't heard of it.
That.
Yeah. You heard of something she hadn't.
Right.
And she's sitting in the car, and she said, I just got this email, and I don't want to click on it, but it's a phishing email. It looks just like something that is legit. And
right.
so we said, don't click on it. But that's part of the problem, is that the hackers become more sophisticated.
Right.
It's not so much firewall, actually. I mean, and I'm not an IT person, so I'm speaking out of turn here, but it's not so much that. It's just that maybe not having the knowledge to understand that there are a lot of people out there who are trying to harm you by gaining your passwords, or even to try to infiltrate a platform such as, like you mentioned earlier, the Teen Tinder.
Right.
Because who is on Teen Tinder? There are teens there. So,
sure.
So a predator is obviously going to make a fake profile
mm-hmm.
and present themselves as someone that they are not. And that's where I think kids don't really understand. They think that they're easy to accept friend requests. They're easy to start communication with someone that they believe is someone of their age who is presenting themselves. You just don't know. And that kind of brings me back to my earlier point. You can be anyone on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you either have that anonymity as a bully, or you can make up an entirely new identity. And that's how kids are lured in. And Chris can attest to that with the platform that they use to lure these kids that are innocent kids, but they are they just don't, they're naive. And so they think they're meeting someone else their age, and they're not.
It's just unbelievable. All right, so how do we protect our kids now? Okay, you both have children. Snapchat's out there. Facebook, I mean, there's probably apps that I don't even know. Teen Tinder, I just found out about too, because I don't have children. But how do you protect your kids? I mean, do you allow them to have Facebook at a young age, or Tinder, or how do you stop it?
So you can't stop it, because it's there. I mean, there's so many different apps that even every day when a kid comes in and I talk to him, I learn about a new app that's come out that kids are communicating through, bullying through, people are trying to pick them up through. I don't think we can't stop what's happening with social media, because it is the future. It's here now. It's how everybody communicates. But we have to monitor our children. So the biggest problem is that someone told me a long time ago that once nighttime, no child should have a phone or a computer or anything that can connect to the internet in their bedroom. If they want to be on that stuff, they should be out in the main room where a parent can pay attention to what's happening. Because
that makes sense.
Once, you know, and I can attest to my own kids, we would look at the phone, I'd look at their phone bill and find out they're texting at 2 and 3 in the morning. So then we had to start going, okay, no more. But we didn't know, because we trusted that they put their phones down. They were using them for their alarm clocks.
Sure, sure.
And we trusted.
She just did air quotes.
Yeah, the
alarm
right.
clocks. I need my phone.
And we trusted right. our kids, because that's what parents do. And they had never shown us that we shouldn't trust them.
Right.
Now, we're very lucky that nothing like that happened in our home. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's a thing with parents today. I think too many parents are allowing social media to raise their children. They're not paying attention. Kids are on video games talking to each other. Kids are on social media. Kids are on all kinds of apps. And nobody's monitoring who they're talking to.
Absolutely. And again, you hit the nail on the head. The kids, teenagers, use their phones for communication, for the internet, for their alarm clock. So does it help?
For school.
Right. Does it help taking the phone away or the iPad?
I think it does. I think that that's a one way to stop it. I don't know how you do it. It's hard. I mean, my kids cringe at me when I say it as well. But, right. you know, not letting them have it in their bedroom after, you know, if their bedtime's 10 o'clock, or as teenagers, if their bedtime's, you know, midnight or 1 in the morning, at that point, the phone should come out of their rooms, because you don't know who's talking to your child.
Right. Absolutely. 312-981-7200 if you want to join the conversation. Text line is blowing up. A lot of people thanking you both for what you do. People saying, have we emphasized who are these predators most likely? Could it be people you already know?
Well, in my line of work, because I do crimes against children, unfortunately, the majority of the offenders are their family members. They're people that the children already know.
So if they come to you, if someone comes to you and says, okay, I feel like this is happening, you know, and it's tough to discuss, but it's happening, and you want to believe your child. I mean, your first instinct is to believe your child, and the parents do not, or do they?
A lot of times our parents don't, unfortunately. I do have parents that are very supportive of their children, but I have a lot of cases where our parents don't believe their child, because unfortunately that maybe the offender is the person who brings the money into the house. Or boy. Supports the family. So they, and the biggest thing, I can speak about this case openly because he's been convicted, he's got life in prison. It was his own children. Okay. And his wife didn't know how to believe it. It's not that she did not believe her children, she absolutely believed her children, but she didn't know how to believe her children, because to believe her children, then she had to admit that she didn't see these things happening, and that destroyed her.
Right, right. Someone from the 815 saying, be in touch with your kid at a gut level, meaning you can tell if even the slightest thing is upsetting your child.
Absolutely. And if a child doesn't, one of the things I find interesting is how many people today force their child to hug someone. Go hug your grandma, go hug your grandpa, go kiss your aunt or uncle. Mm-hmm. When a kid doesn't want to, if a child doesn't want to show affection to a family member, it doesn't necessarily mean something's wrong. But don't force a child to do something that they're not comfortable with.
God, if I had known that, you know, 25 years ago when Yaya was like, mwah, mwah, mwah. Let me pinch those cheeks right off your cheeks. Yeah. But that's great, though. Yeah. They don't want to hug Uncle John or Aunt Tessie. Don't let them do it, right?
Yeah.
I love what that person said, though, because there is, I have a little different perspective on phones, because as Chris mentioned, phones are, there's everything on their phones. They have group chats with their, you know, with their fellow classmates.
Sure.
You know, and they have assignments that they log into and they see. So the phone has become more than this thing where you just text or play games on. This has become a computer in your pocket where you have a connection to the academic and social world. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you need to monitor it after a certain hour. Nothing good happens in dark.
Right.
So I totally agree with that concept, but taking the phone away completely. But I think that monitoring your children and watching, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people don't know the kids that they hang out with. If there was any kid that walked in our house that we didn't recognize, stop, who are you? And why have I never met you before? And I want that conversation with those kids.
Yes.
Not only that, but there are also times where my kids would show up at home with something that wasn't theirs. This is astounding to me as a police officer for 26 years. And you have an offender or even a burglary or something, and you go into the kid's room and there are tons of things that obviously don't belong to them, right? And so my kids would walk in and they're wearing a sweatshirt I've never seen before. I'm like, where'd you get that sweatshirt?
Right.
Whose is it? Uh-huh. I just borrowed it from my friend. You know, but parents need to pay attention to everything. Mm-hmm. And it's not being a helicopter parent. It's about, you know, who are your friends? Who are your kids friends with? Who are they spending time with? What things are showing up in their room? You know, and we have gang members that, you know, the parents will do a knock and talk because, you know, maybe they're on the cusp where we think this kid is, you know, maybe going down a wrong road. So we'll do what's called a knock and talk, where we just make, you know, kind of a face-to-face, meet the kid, talk to them, and we walk in their room and there's gang graffiti, or we flip through their notebooks. They're allowed, you know, here's my kid's notebook, and it's all gang graffiti and gang slogans, and the parents don't have any idea what that is, and that is lost on me how you're not asking those questions. So, you know, parents have to be very astute, and that whoever texted in and said that is on a gut level, and you also know when your kid's behavior shifts. Don't blame it on adolescence and say, oh, that's just the teenage years. They're just locking themselves in their room. No, I mean, if there's a behavior change in your child, you know them best. Call them on it and, you know, make them talk.
We did a story years ago. It was a Will County board member whose son was in a gang. And this was, and he went public with this to say, hey, this is, you know, far southwest suburban. This isn't, you know, Chicago, Englewood. He was a white boy, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. So, you know, he said, you got to watch for the signs. Same type of thing. He said, never in a million years would I have thought my son has joined a gang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not your stereotypical.
Paying attention, yeah. Exactly. And not writing it off. We have a tendency to rationalize, you know, they're fine. They're good kids. They get good grades. So mm-hmm. It's fine, you know, and
yeah.
Go ahead.
And being willing to listen.
Yeah.
I did 6 years in the school as a police officer, and being willing to listen, because we had some parents that were fantastic parents when we brought them in or made a phone call about the things we found in their kids' lockers or behavior changes at school. They were there, they wanted to help, they wanted to know. And then we had other parents where we would call, and the parents were angry at us because what right did we have to go into their locker?
Right.
Not that I found stolen property, not that I found gang graffiti, not that I found drugs or drug paraphernalia.
Sure.
What right did I have?
And when did that shift? I mean, the blaming of authority. We used to be scared to death as kids. It was like, hey, if you don't go to bed on time, we're going to call the police. And of course, you know, maybe that was the step in the wrong direction, but we went to bed. Or, you know, you didn't talk back.
That's why everyone's scared of police, because of your right. parents.
Because of my mom and dad.
Thank
absolutely.
Thanks,
but,
Mom.
But this shift, kind of like this, you know, and I don't mean to sound like get off my lawn, but this kind of lack of respect, you know, and as far as privacy, I'm sure there is a line, especially for adolescents. You know, young boys and girls need their privacy. I understand that. But at what risk? And okay, you just looked at me like I'm crazy.
Because her and I will tell you, the chief and I differ on this completely.
Okay. Okay.
Because I don't
Good.
Believe in my home. It's my home. You don't have privacy. If I want to go in your room and look through it, I can. Now, she's more in the camp of, I want to wait until they show me a reason why I should look for their room.
Okay.
And I'm in the camp of, I'm going to walk through and just check it out and just make sure there's not any problems here. And if there's not a problem, there's not a problem.
Yeah. I think my mom would follow that same school, too. You're in my house, my rules. But you, Kristen, are more of, hey, give them a little bit of space.
You know, parenting is, as a police chief, it's challenging, but being a parent is even more challenging because you're trying to trust your children. Parenting is that sweet spot, right? Because if you're overly strict, what I have seen over the years is then kids will sneak around and they will do things because of that, you know, that because of that helicopter. So they will do things, and it's not, I've not been the perfect parent. I'm still trying to figure it out, and my youngest is on his way to college on Sunday.
Get you the tissues. Stand
yeah, exactly. I'll be rocking right. back and forth in the corner if anyone needs me.
I was going to say, good thing we're doing the interview tonight, because next week you're going to be a hot mess.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that it's not, it's an art and a science. There is not a handbook. You have to listen and watch and on that intuitive level know your children. And you also have, here's the biggest thing, is you're the parent, and that's where a lot of people I think get a little confused, is that in that privacy, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't have access. If you're paying for a phone, you have access to that phone, you know, but parents want to befriend their children, or they don't want to hold them accountable because they don't want to be the bad guy. And, you know, in my position is I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to raise really good human beings that are going to contribute to society in a positive way. And when you become of age, and, you know, we can be friends then, but before that time, you're probably going to hate me for a bit. And right. that's pretty okay.
It's called parenting. It's
called
okay.
parenting.
We'll continue the conversation with Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and Kane County Child Advocacy Center Investigator Chris Tunney after this on 720 WGN. 753-720-WGN. Andrea Darlis on the Patty Vasquez Show. Patty out for a couple of days, and I'm taking over the reins for this week and next week. We're having a great conversation with Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and Chris Tunney from the Kane County Child Advocacy Center, talking about how to protect your child from cyberbullying, watching what they're doing online, on their phones. And Chris, you mentioned you worked in the schools for many years as well, and I want to talk a little bit about school safety and these active shooter drills. I know things... This post 9/11 world, and I guess post Sandy Hook and post Columbine, has just completely changed. How have you guys seen the changes, and what changes are being made for the better nowadays?
So one of the things that we're doing is making sure that we have consistency in policy regarding the partnership between the police department and the schools. Prior to that, you may have remembered that we had a red card, green card program where if there was an active shooter, we put the red card out saying that there was someone inside that was hurt. But as we delved into that more, we realized that it might not be the best and most proficient way of handling things, because you just never know whether that's accurate or not. So we have tried to get everyone, especially, and I'm speaking for Aurora because that's who I can speak for, but we have ALICE training, which is alert, lockdown, inform, counter, and evacuate. And so basically it's kind of like the run, hide, fight premise, is right. that get out of there if you can, hide if you can't run, and then fight only as a last resort. We don't want to see people getting hurt, but we also understand that there are people who could potentially overtake someone who is doing harm. So, you know, the point is that we want to eliminate the threat as fast as possible. So those are the trainings we go through. Our police department goes through active shooter trainings all the time. We have a top-notch training division, and I firmly believe you play like you practice. And so we put our officers through those scenarios, and we emulate all of those scenarios that happen. And we do that again in a training scenario, but it feels very real. And educating the schools on better ways that they can protect both the physical environment and emotional environment, and that latter meaning what a lot of times we look backwards, right? We connect the dots backwards,
right? Like, you know,
I should have seen that coming, or right. that's not a surprise. That kid did this, and we saw that coming from a mile away. Well, if you saw it coming, then why were there not steps taken, you know, in the intermediate to keep that child from taking that action?
Right.
And so a lot of times we see that there are many, many clues that they leave behind, whether it be a paper or something that they say to another student. student. And a lot of times people are apprehensive about coming forward, especially peer students. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to trouble anyone, or it's probably just talk, you know. But for us, we investigate everything, and we've had these threats, and we've had social media threats that have turned out to be, fortunately for us, you know, that were just empty threats. But we're going to check out every single one of them. So it's a multitude. It's not just the police department. It's also the educators, you know, the schools, administrators working together to combat this.
For kids and parents and teachers, do you follow the if you see something, say something?
Absolutely.
Even if it turns out to be false,
absolutely,
better to check with police.
And there have been many empty threats that we have followed up on, and again, where we've gone to jumped through many hoops to try to determine the identity of that person who was maybe posting anonymously, and we've determined who they are, and I was just trying to elicit a response, and we found that they didn't have any means to carry out the threat. There are other times where we've thwarted a threat where someone has come forward. So I would say that there is nothing that someone should feel as though, oh, I don't want to bother anyone with this, it's probably nothing. If it's your instinct, or you see something, then you absolutely have to report it.
You both do such an amazing job. And before we run out of time, I want to talk, Kristen, about your studies and where you are moving forward now to, and your next, and not your next endeavor, but what you're doing as far as your master's.
Are you trying to kick me out of the police department?
No, not at all. Not at all. I want to see you
at
a federal level, perhaps someday.
Perhaps. I don't know what's happening. So, yes, I'm working on my second master's degree, and it's through the Center of Homeland Security and Defense, through the Naval Postgraduate School. I will graduate, knockwood, hopefully. I have to finish my thesis. Any good editors out there? That would be great. I will finish my thesis in December. But the reason that I decided to pursue this program through the Naval Postgraduate School is because I started to recognize that state and local law enforcement are largely disconnected from our federal partners when it comes to terrorist attacks. And if you think back to 9/11, that fateful day, that was the worst terrorist attack that has befallen our nation. And you know, black helicopters did not come from the sky that were the military. It was police and firefighters that were running into buildings. And they are the first line of defense on our streets. And so as the chief of police, I feel largely responsible, very much responsible for our citizens, our 200,000 population, as well as the 300 police officers that serve those citizens. And I started to think about what would happen if our community were to have a terrorist or someone active in the community that was planning an attack. And so I thought, I need to educate myself more on this topic, and I need to find a way that state and local law enforcement can partner even better with our federal partners to thwart those terrorist attacks. And the more I have learned in this program, which has been extremely challenging, but the more I recognize that it is truly the boots on the street that are the first ones to say, wow, my spidey senses are tingling about that. And so that, and then our communication, this has opened the door for me to communicate with FBI. We have a fantastic FBI director right now, and our DEA, all of our federal partners, we all come together for the same mission. So it's enabled me to get out of my silo and to reach out and to hopefully, you know, share information that will protect our city.
Maybe Homeland Security Secretary someday.
I'll send my resume.
Okay, good. Right. Good luck.
Can I put you down as a reference?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you both for coming in. This has been enlightening. It's been awesome. Aurora Police Chief Kristen Zeman and Kane County Child Advocacy Center Investigator Chris Tunney. Thank you both.
Thanks for having us.
Come back again. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN.